For those of us old enough to remember economic and political discourse of the 1950s and 60s, much of that discourse was concerned with the struggles between labor and capital. All of that has almost completely vanished in current commentary. Today I'm sharing a controversial article that argues that capitalism has attempted and largely succeeded in co-opting and compromising all forms of opposition, including labor, with its own narrative of unfettered free market. The article is entitled Gender, Class, and Capitalism by Rob Urey. A half a century ago, a capitalist coup was launched in the U.S. to shift power from labor and the liberation movements of the 1960s to the lords of capital. The political trajectory since then has gone in only one direction, to the right. A simulacrum of democracy was created through oppositional political parties that serve a single master, capital. How we, the citizens of the West, got from there to here is a great mystery by design. Terms put forward as descriptive, like populism and economic anxiety, are cover for more brutal realities. The language and social dimensions of liberation were co-opted as weapons of class warfare. Liberation movements, conceived in opposition to capitalism, were moved within its confines. Once within, these movements served to direct attention elsewhere, as oligarchs made off with the greatest concentration of wealth in human history. Following the women's liberation movements of the 1960s, gender pay equity was separated from the class struggle to be made a woman's issue. Women workers in the U.S. have long been paid less than men for equivalent work. Since they began re-entering the paid labor force in large numbers in the 1970s, liberal efforts have entered on closing this gender pay gap. Left out of liberal framing is whether doing so would be achieved through the raising the living standards of working class women or lowering the relative position of labor in class terms. To the extent the term patriarchy has deceptive content, it goes quite beyond labor issues. The question of liberation then is, how would power be redistributed away from patriarchy outside of economic power? Wage labor has relatively low standing in the capitalist schema. As evidence presented here suggests, the struggle for gender pay equity has taken place as oligarchs and corporate executives absconded with large quantities of social wealth. Through their class positions, most women have had their own economic loss diminished through this concentration at the top. The systematic nature of this development might be more easily seen through analogy. By placing predominantly male manufacturing workers in competition with low-paid and unpaid workers overseas, NAFTA and subsequent trade deals lowered wages, bargaining power, job security, and living standards for manufacturing workers. Earlier still, working-age men began leaving the workforce as working-age women entered, and wages for men stagnated or fell as those for women rose. Inside the frame of gender struggle, progress for women stayed a bit ahead of losses for men. Outside of it, the American working class has been economically devastated. The centering of men's labor, against which gender pay equity has been posed as a goal, keeps the conception of labor wholly within the frame of capitalist social relations. Following World War II, the federal government forced working women, many of whom had been recruited to industrial labor as part of the war effort, to leave their jobs so they could be taken by returning soldiers. Implied was a surplus of labor as the war effort ground to a halt. The entry of women into the workforce in the 1970s was coincident with a capitalist move to increase profits by disempowering labor. Increasing the supply of labor in the face of an existing labor surplus was central to the effort of crushing labor unions. The capitalist coup of the 1970s was undertaken to shift power away from labor and to the rich so that they could claim a larger share of labor's products. And the rich were successful. Labor productivity continued to rise as women re-entered the workforce. But the capitalist class and corporate executives were to keep all this increase for themselves. From the capitalist perspective, it was women's class position and relative pay levels that made them attractive employees, not their gender. Beginning in the mid-1970s, and coincident with the rise in women joining the workforce, wages began to stagnate. Workers continued to produce more, but they could no longer demand to be paid for the product of their labor. Of relevance is that the movement of gender pay equity took place against rapidly increasing inequity for most workers. For every engaged and well-employed scientist or attorney, there are 9 marginally employed workers staffing the French fry stations at fast food restaurants and cash registers at chain drugstores. Most people who work do so because they must. This is true of most of the women who have entered the paid workforce. Lest this comes as a shock, Women worked before they entered the paid workforce. This distinction between paid and unpaid labor is more precisely between capitalist labor and other forms. Precisely, it isn't work that is liberatory, as it is put forward in the liberal sense. It is being paid to work when money has been made a prerequisite for eating regular meals, living indoors, and social participation. In a systemic sense, capitalists created a world they control and then set about defining social struggle within terms amenable to it. Gender pay equity has been framed wholly within the capitalist social relations. The question of whether women wanted to join the paid workforce could only be answered by removing the necessity of doing so. Otherwise, the question resembles, would you rather be stabbed or shot? Since around 1970, capitalism has been the organizing philosophy of Western political economy. Oligarchs and corporate executives were given virtually free rein to organize society as they saw fit. What they did with this power, as easy to predict prospectively as it is retrospectively, was to put everything that wasn't nailed down in their own pockets. More broadly, in a full Hannah Arendt banality of evil sense, they crafted the world in their own image. With talk of socialism and rising optimism over the possibility of reversing the wrong turn taken in the 1970s, it is crucial to note that as of now, nothing of substance has changed. War is still a business, the environment is still in crisis, the same people are still in charge, and class warfare is still a bipartisan endeavor. In this case, begging isn't a route to political redemption. Power responds to power. Anything else is wishful thinking. That was an article from Counterpunch entitled Gender, Class, and Capitalism by Rob Urey. Rob Urey is an artist and political economist. His book, Zen Economics, is published by Counterpunch.